My name is Ads Dawson, formerly Adam. I'm a senior security engineer at Cohere. I will take my coffee anywhere I can get it. So I moved to North America. I was kind of like addicted to the gasoline style coffee you have here, you know, which literally just gets the ball rolling. But I went to Mexico recently. I've become a bit of a snobby connoisseur. I'm really into my AeroPress, my espressos, but I'm also a sucker for a cortado. So, you know, if it's an early morning, a cortado or anything. I love coffee. I'm a big fan. Anything dark roasted is perfect.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the MLOps Community Podcast. I'm your host, Dimitri Ost, and today we are talking with none other than Ads Dawson, who gave me a deep dive masterclass on everything security when it comes to dealing with large language models and how your AI systems, not only large language models, I should say, also this in a way applies to predictive ML also, but he just talked about what you need to be cognizant of when you put these AI applications into production from a security standpoint. He's done a lot of work on the OWASP system, which he talks about. And if anyone wants to go and check that out, or if you are doing anything with AI right now, you should probably go to LLMtop1010.com, LLMtop10.com, because that gives you a bit of a checklist of everything that you need to be cognizant of when you are creating these AI systems so that they do not have any wild vulnerabilities. We go into some of the wildest vulnerabilities that he's seen on the job. We also talk about what he thinks is a potential danger that is not being talked about enough, and also how to bridge this pipeline between the securities world and the ML world, and what we need to be thinking about as ML engineers when we are looking at our systems and making sure that they are safe and secure. Last but not least, this was probably my favorite part of it, and it's at the end of the episode when we talk about data poisoning. And his friend Will, who did as an experiment, he went and bought a bunch of domains on the internet that he knew Common Crawl was going to crawl. And I'll leave it at that, because that is what's called foreshadowing. All right, I hope you all enjoyed it, and if you do, make sure to share it with a friend. That would be the best and coolest thing that you can do for this podcast. We'll see you all on the flip side. Take care. So, my buddy Diego Oppenheimer he's the former CEO before they sold to DataRobot of Algorithmia. And since like 2020, he's been on a kick, always talking about how important it is to think about security and security vulnerabilities. And he literally sent me about 3 days ago something that he called out back in, I think, 2021, which was like, hey, everybody, you might want to be careful about just Python packages, import or pip install this package or that package. And he sends me this, which says hundreds of malicious Python packages found stealing sensitive data. Yes. And I imagine you've seen that. So I think we can kick it off there. Like, that's probably like the 101 that we can start with. Like, the pip installs, be careful with your pip installs.
Yeah, 100%. And to be honest, like, supply chain vulnerabilities is its own realm. Super important in any kind of security. Like, traditionally, normally we care about AppSec, but I feel like there's definitely a gap between security and MLOps, or however you want to traditionalize that, that sometimes as a security guy, like, we don't know. The MLOps community is super intelligent, like building models and stuff. And that's something I don't understand, because that's not my background. But so it's about understanding from a security perspective to be like, hey, you're actually building on Python code. Okay, like, what are you actually dependent on? Because, like, supply chain vulnerability and like SAST and DAST although there's arguments about whether they're good, useful, or bad, like absolute key pillars. And yeah, especially if you've got like sensitive information, for example, like you got like sensitive, if you're training on private data, then yeah, like you could be hosed in a day. So it's like all about like safeguarding your environment, and like it completely starts at supply chain for sure.
Yeah, so that is the way that we just like dive in off on the deep end into this kind of conversation that I am expecting is going to be, it's going to scratch my own itch, because I also am very interested in the whole security and privacy, but mainly security and vulnerabilities space, because I got my start working for a password management company. And basically, I started like dipping my toe into sharing things on LinkedIn in 2018. And yeah, all I would do is reshare, oh, this company got hacked, or this happened. So I kind of knew all about the bad shit that could happen.
Yeah.
But you've been in the game for a while, and I think it's worth a little introduction. You're currently working at Cohere. You are a security and vulnerabilities ninja. You're doing that, but you also are doing things with OWASP, and OWASP made its rounds around the community. And if anybody hasn't seen that project and what you're doing there, we'll leave links to it in the description. But can you give us a bit of background on A, your work at Cohere, and then what OWASP is?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm part of the security team at Cohere. Obviously, I guess within our security realm, we have standard red team and blue team, as you would call it, kind of exercises. This is my first gig at an NLP company, which is super exciting because I get to be part of this incredible kind of journey and shift in landscape that we're seeing at the moment. But yeah, primarily I'm, you know, in charge of looking after our application security stack, as well as actually like our models integrating. And the perfect way for me to get into that space was actually being a part of the OWASP project. So the title is OWASP Top 10 LLMs for Applications. The latter part of that, applications, is important because it basically defines, it's not vulnerabilities or risks about LLMs, although it does touch on it. It's to a broader scope of how do you safely and securely implement those models into your environment. So it takes like traditional layers of like application security, like supply chain security, as we discussed earlier, and how to really develop those models in there. The project, we just actually completed V1.1, which was start of October, and we're continuously developing open community, and that's been a kind of a great story and great chapter for me, because it's really helped me learn from, you know, MLOps side, and kind of like trying to bridge that gap that I feel that we have between security and ML alignment. Yeah,
what are the things that you feel like are different just in the work that you've done in the past versus now working with a large language model company?
Oh, so I mean, to be honest, like there's a few kind of vulnerabilities that may overlap. You've got your kind of like, for example, like DOS, for example. But how something like denial of service could relate to like shadow modeling, I feel like it's helped me understand, but also there's a completely different realm because you have traditional kind of vulnerabilities, but then you also have this separate layer because applications themselves inherently have security risks. But then you're putting an intelligent model on top of your application, which has access, hooks, you know, all these kind of realms, and effectively that's like spreading your ecosystem, which is spreading your attack vector. Which when, you know, when you're threat modeling, that is giving you increased risk and so many other kind of gaps and areas that you need to fulfill, especially the model itself. Obviously you care about the model quality, because if the model is poor quality, then it might have a subsequent action on the amount of permissions or access it has, right? If you've got a vulnerability in like how the model can access or pull something, like let's say like a plugin, if the model quality is not there as well, then it may also be susceptible. So I feel like there's two parts of it. You've got LM application security, but then you've got the actual LM secure itself, right?
Oh, I see what you're saying there. It's like, hey, this LLM has this access, but if it's not locked down, that access being open can get hacked from something else or just by the LLM itself doing things
Correct.
Without even realizing that it's doing it.
Yeah, like if you've got like the application has got vulnerabilities, or you know, you've got something real simple, let's say like it has access into a private database instance or something that it shouldn't do, which is holding private information, but then that LLM itself is also vulnerable to prompt injection, which is like another kind of the taxonomy, then effectively you're like, you have two layers of that not trusted because the model is itself not trusted because it's vulnerable to prompt injection, but then also you've got the other gap in the environment, right? So yeah.
So this is the other piece, and it's funny that we're talking today because it feels like it's come up in a few other conversations that I've been having today. And so getting you on here now as the specialist, I get to kind of pry and learn what some of the best practices are. And really, some people were mentioning how if you are fine-tuning an LLM on private sensitive data, then all of a sudden that is now open for everyone to go and have their way with. And potentially there's a lot of prompt injection problems that can come from that, or just even data access. Like,
yeah,
we spend so much time making sure that the right people have the right access to the right data, and then later you just throw an LLM out there in the wild and boom, anybody has access to it. So have you seen good ways of how that is being combated?
Yeah, I think there's also like there's a lack of the taxonomy between that kind of thing, because say a prompt injection can lead to like server-side request forgery, cross-site request forgery. There's so many kind of like vulnerabilities on an LLM itself, which can then spread into that. But yeah, you're exactly right. Like I kind of, I guess I kind of go back to like the, you know, the layer eight, or sometimes a joke about how humans are your biggest element of weakness when it comes to security. If you've got like a LLM which is also forming that bad practice, then you've got problems. So I like to think, what I like to do is, from myself, I do a lot of like red teaming. So I like to look at stuff from like an external perspective, and I kind of threat model, which is basically assessing and evaluating risk and then working from there. So you're kind of looking at your attack vector and seeing like what your I guess your gaps are, and then trying to apply mitigations where you have the highest amount of risk and so forth. And kind of go back to like security and layers. So yeah, you like, if you're doing like a private beta and you're training on private data, or you're tuning on that, like first of all, you want the lineage. So where is that data coming from? Like what kind of access? Like if you're pulling from like Slack, let's say, like let's check like the token and see like, does it have the permission to pull from public channels or private channels or all this kind of stuff? Because then if you have a prompt injection, then you could be leaking something from a private channel, which inherently is private because it has something in it which you don't want the greater audience to know, right?
Good point. Oh, such a good point.
So don't give your keys to the kingdom and then give something access to be able to pull that, right? I guess.
Yeah, and when you're talking about data lineage, it's on the training part, or it's also in the output part, like when the LLM is outputting it and they're saying, here's the reference. If it ticks a box, or how does that look? Like what it...
That's a really great question. And honestly, I think it's twofold. So first of all, like it's almost, depending on what you're training for and your use case, I feel like sometimes it's almost impossible to have that entire lineage unless it's so closed and so small, the training data, that effectively, you know, if you've got something like OpenCrawler, you've got no chance of like being able to find that. But I guess the key is regular kind of benchmark. Well, I won't use the word benchmarking because it's different in MLOps, but in security, like, you know, I guess like regular red team exercises and ensuring that you're logging and analyzing and like interpreting the data that goes in and out, because effectively the trust boundary between a client and a model is bidirectionally unsafe. Like you can't trust what's coming in and you can't trust what's going out. So there's a way that you can measure that and analyze that, then that's effectively going to be able to help you to understand where nasty citations are coming from or where you've got trends. But then also having that lineage to be able to potentially go back and be like, okay, we trained and released the model over this week, and now we're getting like a bunch of content which is unsafe, then like let's kind of like almost like a backup and restore kind of method. Like let's look back and then look and try and find what was actually added between those states. So, I know this sounds very convoluted, but kind of at a high level, that is able to, if you can provide that, then you know that gives you that kind of lineage and auditing. But again, it's hard based on your use case.
I think I'm going to steal this phrase that you just said, which is bidirectionally unsafe. That might be my next album name.
That's a great album. Well, I'm primarily a network guy, so bidirectional is yeah, it's just embedded in my brain. But yeah, like again, kind of going back to the threat modeling, if I was to, you know, perform a traditional threat modeling, if I was to use like MITRE ATLAS framework or something like that, then I would start sketching the environment and then look at trust boundaries, and that's where you can kind of really evaluate that risk. Because like say between a client and a model, it's inherently not trusted both ways, because like say you,
yeah,
that's the whole point, right?
Well, when you're talking about red teaming, I think there is something else that comes up where red teaming means one thing when you're dealing with a model, and then it means another thing when you're dealing with secure systems. And a little bit of a tangent that I just remembered I wanted to point out, where you were saying, yeah, that the cliche is that your weakest link is the humans that are part of the system. And I just remember that going back to the password management company I worked for, we would always laugh because the meme there was that your passwords are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that doesn't cut it, you know? And so yeah, it's very much that, where you're looking at your system and you have the red teaming of the models, which is trying to get the model to do something that it shouldn't do, I guess, and really this is in the reinforcement learning with human feedback, where they're trying to make sure that the model isn't going to tell you to go and how to kill yourself, right? And
yeah,
so I've heard that described as red teaming. But then when you're talking about red teaming, I think I get the feeling that you're talking about a whole different type of red teaming, which isn't necessarily figuring out how to not produce toxic output from the models.
Yeah, Nate, you're absolutely right. And I guess there is a twofold or a multi-angle that you can kind of look at that, I would say, because yeah, effectively we do perform, and I have performed red teaming on a model itself. So, you know, like trying to, you know, whether you call it like jailbreaking or you try from that angle, but then also if it's susceptible to that, or it may be susceptible, then you also, like, I know, like a traditional red teaming itself, the problem with security is that there is actually no automated workflow, like standardization, which normally you can, you know, you've got your traditional like web app scanners. That's not everything you should rely on when it comes to application security, but you at least have a basis. Whereas when it comes to like LM application security, it's so specific, because you may have a model that doesn't even have plugins, for example. So like, why would you try attack a plugin? So it's all kind of customized. And there really is a huge gap in the market right now if you want to do a startup LM red teaming. But yeah, it's so specific. Like you say, yeah, there's traditional attacks that, you know, you can see a bunch of like jailbreaks and stuff. But then also, like you say, you want to be monitoring for that toxic citations, toxic content. But again, like, you know, if you're talking about red teaming, like, let's say toxic citations, for example, if you're doing that threat modeling and you're trying to enhance security in layers, then why not take a huge mitigation off the LLM itself by actually like putting something like, you know, like some kind of safe proxy in front of your model, right? If you're building a model application and it's pulling citations to be able to, you know, produce outputs for me and you to tell us, you know, what the weather is tomorrow or all this kind of stuff, just a simple kind of security layer, like that's one element you could do something like that, which is then controlling where it can access, which is kind of what I was trying to allude to earlier when we were talking about, you know, having that potentially unintelligent like brain function, but then also like what can it actually pull and access, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I have to ask this now, because you've seen a lot of shit. What's the freakiest vulnerability with respect to LLMs? Because I'm sure you could talk all day about all the vulnerabilities that you've seen. Like, what's something that you've seen with respect to LLMs, and maybe the top ones, or the top one that just stands out? Like, dude, I could not believe this one.
Yeah. So if I give a shout out, it's Embrace the Red. You should check out some of the stuff. It's a lot of these like vulnerabilities are published online once they mitigated. So that's a great reference that I would suggest. It's easily one of the people in that space. But yeah, I've seen one of the things when I started looking into this realm, because I'm a bit of a nerd and a loser, I love to read bounties and stuff, and I use that for my own kind of knowledge, and I kind of learn from that, so I get a two-way from it. But I've seen things like prompt injection. So for example, like you've got the client and the model. The client says to the model, hey, summarize this website. And this website is some kind of website. It's my own. And on that website, I might have a GIF or an image. I've got some kind of bogus information. But underneath, I've got like hidden markdown elements, which contain like, let's say malicious instructions, let's call it. So it's got like a jailbreak on it. Or it tells the model to do XYZ. The model reach out, pulls a citation, is vulnerable to prompt injection. So you've got kind of two realms of like, that's where your problem is. Pulls the instructions. It starts, outputting the response to the website, like the legitimate. It'll literally then perform the takeover and actually start performing the instructions. And then those instructions have then used other plugins to pull information from other websites or post information. So like it could then make some other kind of authorized. So like, let's say your malicious instructions say, delete my GitHub repository secrets. You have the plugin installed with GitHub on the same model. Boom, goes to GitHub, sends a post request. See you later. Adios, that's annoying. Like that was really like a huge eye-opener for me, because it's one of the first. It might not be like the highest, there's a bunch of other stuff, but it's definitely kind of, you realize how many moving pieces you have and how many, how that could be so severe.
And it's not only that, but it's that you're completely out of the loop, and it has so much autonomy and so much agency, no pun intended, with these agents, that it can go so far and do so much without you being anything involved.
Correct. Yeah. Like APIs have so much access and inherently aren't secure. You put something which is like vulnerable, susceptible to like being manipulated on top of it, then, and which has like full administrative privileges and full access, then it could be sticky.
Oof. So it sounds like just the basic thing to do is just make sure you're not giving those LLMs enough or any privileges, or just like the minimum that it needs.
Yeah.
And really look at that, revise that.
I think, if you don't mind, I'll use another one. We talked about like the LLM security itself, and we talked about like toxic citations. One thing that you might not like consider, which is toxic, but it is toxic, right? So I've seen that this is quite a trending thing at the moment. So, okay, your client A, I'm client A, you're client B. Client A goes to the model and says, hey, like, please, like, I'm having some problems with this NPM package, JavaScript library, okay? The model tries to help me. And then that information then enters the actual, I guess, like what we'd call the data of the model, right? That NPM package doesn't exist at the moment. Let's call it bogus package. So then you come to the, client B comes to the model for help later and is like, I'm having problems with this JavaScript thing. Or, I'm having this problem, or help me with this code. Model tells you to, reference five packages, for example. One of them is my malicious package, which in between your session, I've then gone and posted a malicious backdoor inside a JavaScript package. And then you're pwned, right? Easy. I mean, like, that is obviously a bit hard. That's harder. But it is realistic and it has been done. These situations are like real life. It's not something I'm like, this is what could happen. It's like, I've seen exploitations of this in the wild. And that's like, crazy. But the thing about that is also kind of gnarly is that, like, you would never, how would you know that your model is like hallucinating on like, yeah. like weird packages? Because like, you don't know all the packages. Like, how do you frame that and be like, so like, it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, actually, it's so funny that you mentioned that one, because I had heard that and I thought it, I didn't realize it was that it was planted or someone was training the model to talk about a certain package and then they would go and create that package. I thought it was like, oh, a model kept hallucinating this package name and then somebody was like, well, shit, I'm going to take advantage of that.
Also another, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's sweet. Now I've got this package that I'm just going to create whatever I want from it, and people are going to download my package because the model is recommending it, and we just take whatever the model outputs and be like, all right, sweet. And especially on that level where you're saying is so true, that I think it's human nature in a way, because we're so used to dealing with calculators, that when you type in a number times another number on a calculator and you don't know what the answer is, but you look at it on the calculator, you're like, yep, that's it. It's
must
a big ass
right.
number. And
yeah, calculator
yeah, I am going to trust 100% that that's right. But now all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, this may or may not be right. And we gotta, it's going to be a lot of work to figure out if it is right or if it's hallucinating. Like, might as well just take it at face value. And so
hallucinations traditionally aren't really a security problem, or aren't traditionally dealt a security problem, right? But yeah, you're right. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. That's how it was identified, I guess, because the model was telling you to use, you know, bogus package, and you're like, hey, that doesn't exist. And you're like, I have an idea. Like, let's create myself like a botnet army, right? But also one thing to also mention is, you know, over-reliance, which is part of, like, you know, I guess this is not like it's a hard one, but over-reliance itself is a vulnerability, and you are seeing people using models, like you said all the time, like the calculator kind of comparison, is that people are using models all the time that may not have like proficient coding usage to be able to identify that. And that's where you have like that huge gap. Like, you've seen companies which have had like their information leaked because they've input, you know, something like source code into the model and it spits out to someone else. But then as an LLM application developer, you have a responsibility as part of security is to ensure that that information that is entering is scrubbed and is sanitized from inputting the model, which is another vulnerability itself, right? Because, yeah, I guess as you're wanting to protect your stakeholders of that model, and by doing so, that's, you know, scrubbing, interpreting that data, and making sure that sensitive stuff isn't from client A and client B isn't entering the model, really.
Yeah, and that really is the case for, hey, I mean, I think that's a great case for Cohere being like, hey, we're bringing the model to you, and you don't need to worry about 20 other businesses using this model. It's just yours.
Yeah, exactly right. So yeah, that's definitely seems to be a gap, which is truly awesome. But yeah, there's definitely, you know, your data input, again, because it's that, you know, in untrusted trust boundary. Yeah, you can't trust it, but then you also don't want to pull it in because it may be malicious or it could be unintentionally malicious. I guess when you talk about prompt injection, you've got direct prompt injection, but you've also got indirect prompt injection. Like, so
it's like, why is it telling me that? I didn't ask it. And
yeah, exactly, right? Exactly.
Yeah, but now that you gave me this answer, I guess I'm going to use it. Like, that you have to be very, you have to have some high morals to not all of a sudden it spits out the secret key and you're like, well,
calculated, so.
Yeah. Yep. Let's go to Vegas, baby. We're on. So, oh, that's awesome. And how do you see this moving forward? Like, is this going to be continuously just like getting gnarlier and gnarlier as we move forward? Because we're going to start seeing more and more production applications being built with this, and then more vulnerabilities because the surface area is so wide and that attack vector is so large. Is that what you're thinking? Or do you feel like there's also the companies that are coming out with this are starting to recognize, hey, this is a really serious problem, and we see these ways of getting ahead of the puck.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's both. I think, like, you know, companies do care. Like they care about their customers, and at the end of the day, like, that's what customers are caring about, because I feel like this space is becoming more well known. I think when, like, you know, AI has been going for a long time, but this shift in, like, our, you know, our landscape is, like, and the thing is, they're rapidly developing at the moment.
Hey, Laszlo here. If you're serious about MLOps, you hit subscribe right now.
The problem with security and adopting it into LLM applications, because there's so many LLM applications which are out there right now which don't inherit any security controls. There's such a race, I guess, in, you know, AI itself between companies, that moving so quickly is so hard to adapt when you're trying to apply security, but you're also trying to produce the best product. So that you're in a bit of an arms race, as it were, but you know, you're definitely trying to meet both ends. But there's definitely a need. And I think these attacks and things will just start to, you know, become crazier and crazier and gnarlier. You know, you've got open source models as well, right? Which are fantastic.
Yeah.
But then that also is increasing the attack vector, because you're going to have so many stakeholders, clients that are going to be using applications published on, you know, published in public repos, things like that. So yeah, it's there's definitely a shift in landscape. But I feel like there's definitely red teaming for LMs itself, or LM applications. It is, like, say, as I was saying earlier, it's a custom thing right now. And it's so hard to identify, and it's so hard to standardize that into your pipeline, as you were, even like if it's like CI/CD, for example. There's so many things you can do, but then it is so specific that there's definitely a need for that as well.
And you mean it's so handmade because of the different use cases, or just because of the different systems that each business has, or the different models? Like, what makes it so custom?
Yeah, I'd say both, because some models have been trained on X data, so theoretically, like, you know, there may be situations where there's no concern about what it's a hallucination about something that is public because you've only trained on private data, for example, or getting something like prompt injection, you know, that kind of gnarly attack that I was talking about earlier, where it's pulling malicious instructions from the website. If you don't have an application or an agent which has like RAG, which is able to pull that citation, then that's not a risk to you. So therefore, like, implementing that in your red team means, I would say, is like, it's not as worthwhile in that case, because that's what I'm trying to mean by the custom kind of thing. Like, say you've got different use cases, different data that it's been trained on, different, you know, different features or plugins, I guess, is kind of the word that most people are familiar with, whether it has access to the internet or not, whether it has access to private data stores. So
or different apps.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well,
so that's another fascinating piece, is like, how do you see security changing depending on the different use cases or maturity of your LLM application? Like, if you're using a RAG, how does the security need to change, and what do you need to be thinking about versus just like chat with your data type thing? Well, I guess a chat with your data potentially is going to be using a RAG, but then just like a off the shelf messing around with a chatbot LLM.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an opening of taxonomy now. I feel like we, within the OWASP projects, we were definitely able to get like a building base. OWASP projects themselves, even the same for traditional APIs or mobile applications, it's not like a set in stone. That shouldn't be like the Bible that you base on, because like I said, when you're actually like assessing risk and you've got something custom like a web application, then you may not be susceptible or vulnerable to certain elements. So therefore, those aren't adoptable to you. But I feel like in the OWASP project, we were definitely first able to kind of get like a standardization and kind of build that taxonomy. But one thing I think from, like, you know, from vendors or whoever's good, you know, these vendors of this space, needs to identify that taxonomy between even like bug bounties, right? We've seen like LM or NLP companies on bug bounties right now. like defining that taxonomy of how prompt injection could also lead to like cross-site scripting, which is a traditional API security problem. So there's definitely an open space for that realm. Yeah.
So for the uninitiated SecOps people out there, like OWASP, what it is, what the project that you did with it is, and go deep into that.
Yeah, the OWASP Top 10 for OM.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So OWASP is an open foundation, kind of well known in the security community. They have things like what's known as the ASVS, which is the Application Security Vulnerability something. I can't remember the last one.
Nice.
Acronym is something, but they have a set of frameworks which is to aid developers and engineers on how to build like secure software. So what we did from that is that OWASP foundation or framework has multiple projects for different things. So like you've got traditional web applications, which could be REST APIs, gRPC, for example. But then you've also got like mobile applications. Well, what we did here is that we tried to develop an OWASP Top 10 for LLM applications, which is taking the elements of building a secure application, whether that's like something like a web app or something, but then like say additionally laying that LLM on top of it, right? So like you've got your traditional things like, denial of service, which is like a traditional like web application security. You want to make sure you have things like rate limiting in place, but then also with your model, I guess that same element applies where you don't want your model to become unavailable from lack of rate limiting, but then also like lack of rate limiting on like a model could also relate to things like shadow modeling, which also then you've also got other problems. So what we try to do is try to build on top of that. So some of the top 10, which is like just like an open standard, well, not a standard, but it's more of a reference for people on how to build secure LLM applications, is that like, hey, these are like the top things you should look out for based on what we've seen, what we've know, what we can interpret, and like what we're kind of worried about based on those things.
Oh, nice.
So we've published what's known as like a top 10, which is effectively really simple. It's llmtop10.com. And it's effectively just 10 vulnerabilities, which we deem the highest. They were voted by the community as the highest when we had our submissions. We continue to develop. That list is not hard set. There will be removals, additions, as there is with every OWASP top 10. But, there's also other spaces, other white papers, things like that. But it's just like a free resource and a community for people to be able to contribute. And it's been great. Honestly, I've learned so much. We have people from all kinds of backgrounds, communities where they have no experience, like they're an MLOps ninja, whether they're a security person like me and just like totally entering this like crazy world, or vice versa. So it's really building or bridging that gap, which is great.
And so it is a fully open project and it is community driven, and it's LLM top 10, like 10 or TEM?
Yes. 10, okay, actually, that's a good point. LLM top 10. Okay.
10.
Yeah.
Top. And that's awesome because anybody can go. So for me, I'm messing around with my system and tomorrow I realize, oh shit, like I just found a big vulnerability when dealing with agents or something like that. I can go and submit that to the project and let people vote on it.
So example, like excessive agency is actually one of the entries. So what it'll have, like if you go into the actual vulnerability itself, I forgot to mention the project is also accessible from OWASP.org, which is like the main framework website, as it were, but it's easier to navigate straight to it. But you'll have an introduction about basically this is what it is. Then there'll be like common examples of the vulnerability. So this is like if you don't apply those secure practices that are listed in the introduction or the description, then this is kind of vulnerabilities or risks you can see based on XYZ. Then it'll have like an example attack scenario. So like how someone would do something like that. Like, we talked about like the client A and B earlier, how you could control that in those kind of security layers. and then how to prevent. So like steps which are recommended to you based on how to mitigate those threats. And then there's a few reference links in there where there's been like a public write-up about, you know, whether it's like it's an exploit in the wild that we've seen, or, you know, someone's written a white paper on how to apply like best practices to that kind of vulnerability. Hope I'm explaining that well. But
yeah,
it's basically like a TLDR of what those vulnerabilities are, how they're exploited, and how to defend against it.
It's basically the minimum that you need to have in place if you're building a system with AI.
Yeah, I think like if I kind of go back to the OWASP top 10 for web applications, separate project, that is foundationally used by pretty much any developer, security people, which is who are building a web application. That's where they start. That's their basis. That's like their checklist. You see like a lot of compliance frameworks being like, do you comply with the OWASP top 10? Which means that you've assessed and mitigated risk across those top 10. You shouldn't just leave that top 10. You should be limited to that top 10. But that's kind of like, it's become like the de facto standard, or the benchmark that you should be reaching, which is what we're trying to achieve with the top 10 for LM applications.
And what are some things that you would like to see changed within that project?
Great question. So the way we kind of triage and work is we deal with GitHub issues. So we're on GitHub as well. The repository is on GitHub. I won't give you the link for that because it's crazy long. If you go to like GitHub and put OWASP top 10 for LM, or use a search engine, whatever, we work in GitHub issues. So effectively, like, we have a bunch of predetermined labels. I'll raise an issue, whether that's like an enhancement, a recommendation, or just something that I'm like concerned about, whether I'm like, you know, I don't think this vulnerability is really relevant as like this, or I don't think we've covered certain scenarios in here. And we have what's known as like a core team, where there's certain people attributed and dedicated to those individual vulnerabilities. They will then kind of work with you and develop that. So I've actually submitted a few myself in the repository on kind of my beliefs. I'm also a fan of getting, you know, maybe streamlining our top 10 and, you know, a few additions to that based on some other kind of vulnerabilities I've seen. So yeah, I think this continued adoption, like, it's still early, it's still young. Like, I welcome anyone to come and contribute. It's a great opportunity. Everyone's welcome. But also, like, you know, we have an open Slack channel where we have an actual main channel. We just discuss about whatever it may be. We have regular bi-weekly meetings. And then each vulnerability also has its own like Slack channel itself. So if you want to talk something really specific about prompt injection and you want to like go to town, then like that's a place to discuss it. So just continue development. And if we could branch out from something else apart from the top 10, you know, where that's kind of like something like the ASVS, which is like almost like a developer checklist, a bit more in depth, then that would be great. So just continued support. One thing myself as well, is that as a security person, when you're kind of getting into security, or one thing that I did for red teaming is that I worked on like CTFs or captured the flags. What I did was I hosted a lot of like sandboxed vulnerable applications myself, tried to like hack them, learn from them, and then apply that in real world scenario. There's enough at the moment, there's a gap which I'm wanting to fill. Is we have like no vulnerable LM application as part of like a learning resource.
Oh, like a sandbox.
Yeah, right. Some people may have heard of like OWASP Juice Shop, for example, which is what something like that would be awesome.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So that people can get that experience of messing things up without actually having to mess things up.
Yeah, you like get your hands dirty with prompt injection rather than trying to, you know, do it in a safe, controlled manner where there is like a flag where you have to achieve something so you can kind of learn from it.
Have you seen the game Gandalf? My friend David.
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I know the guys at Lakira. They're awesome. Gandalf is super cool. I also had fun with the wizard guy. That's actually one of the, I heard about it just in the community, and it's great. Something like Gandalf, but incorporating, I guess, I would say like the OWASP top 10 that we've listed, not just prompt injection itself, would that is kind of, that's what I was kind of
Also feels like there's bigger scope for the whole system as opposed to just like interacting with the LLM. It's like, what is the LLM being hosted on, or how is the inference coming, and where's the vulnerabilities there, and what does it have access to, and all of that would really help round out the experience so that you can prompt Gandalf to delete your GitHub repo or things like that.
Something like that would be great. You see vulnerable web applications all the time, so like security development or cloud things like this, Yogo, for example, where you can like spin up a container on like a laptop or something, and you know, you can hack away at it. So there's a, but yeah, Lakira is great. Gandalf is awesome. I encourage anyone to give it a go. It's good fun, and it's also a great learning opportunity as well.
Yeah, we just had the LLMs in production virtual event, and David came during one of the breaks, and he walked me through the different levels, and so he was there, and obviously like I wasn't doing that good, and he was giving me hints along the way, but it is fun, man. It is you can spend a lot of time messing around with prompt injections. One thing that is fascinating when it comes to prompt injections and like a prompt injection attack is that one of the other guests on here, and so friend of the pod, we could say, Philip Carter, who built out the tool, the LLM feature at Honeycomb, his current job, which is like a observability platform. He said that when they notice prompt injections, it's very clear because all of a sudden you're getting a shit ton of prompts. Like way more than the average out, you know, it's just like boom, 50 prompts per second type thing. And they're trying they're throwing everything they can at it. So it was kind of easy to combat, but he was like, yeah, it's very common too. It's not something that you think, oh yeah, who's actually going to try and prompt inject this. People are out there and they're trying, especially if you have a free tier that allows you access to the LLM.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I was actually going to say, I actually went to DEF CON this year with the guy from Lakira, which was great.
Oh, nice.
And I was part of the AI Village where we built the taxonomy and did the GRT event, which was kind of like, I guess the TLDR was that it was like a public open offering for anyone at DEF CON to come and kind of like red team a bunch of models.
Nice.
Yeah, which was great because it also was an experience for those AI companies to actually take away that information and kind of use it. So they have, this was great. But yeah, I guess as well, like you say, like that kind of goes back to the whole reason why we did the OWASP top 10 LLM applications. It's because, yeah, like, you know, you want to be careful if you're allowing free tier people to, you know, send like 50 prompts a second. That's a real concern. That's something like, you know, you should be logging, monitoring that, so you're able to identify that. But you can use that to your advantage. There's tons of people trying to do prompt injection on models right now to get it to do XYZ, to get it to give me like, you know, your grandma's email address, like all these things. There's so many people trying to do this right now. But as a company, you should be using this to secure your platform further. You know, you learn from attacks to be able to then defend the fault. That's the whole point of red teaming, right? Like you're effectively attacking something to take away defenses and implement mitigations across what you've been able to successfully exploit.
I think I remember Philip saying like, yeah, that was kind of an easy fix because we just made sure that if all of a sudden they're doing like 10 prompts per millisecond, we cut that off real quick.
Yeah, exactly. Traditional REST API, web application security, rate limiting, things like that. So many other security layers you can implement, even at the user level, right? If you've got depending how like your free tier and premium subscriptions are and all that kind of stuff.
How much do you feel like how much overlap is there where you're like, hey, this is just traditional security stuff in a new flavor that now we're adding it to an LLM? And how much is there like, oh, this is really new and I never would have thought about that?
I think at the moment, like I think a third of it is the new stuff. But it does honestly go back to like traditional like security and layers. It honestly really does. And like assessing that risk, applying that security in layers, because yeah, effectively you've got a very smart, intelligent model able to do all these things. But if you surround and you secure the environment and the ecosystem around it, then you reduce so much risk and you mitigate so much threats just by doing that itself. Like that should be your foundation when building any kind of application, whether it's like a web app, a mobile app, LLM app. But yeah, I'd say it's probably about a third. You know, like example of training data, that's completely like an LLM shindig. That's like, you know, that's good. Traditional web apps has no relation. But again, like traditional security, I've seen, for example, where, let's say OpenCrawler data set, right? And it's, you know, pulling all this data set. One thing I don't know if you like aware of, that some people are like actual purchasing domains which were part of OpenCrawler. So all these bogus domains on the internet, right?
And they're adding a bunch of bullshit. There's some, it's like data poisoning or something, I think it's called.
Data poisoning. Yeah, it is. I can get the name of it in a second. But yeah, example, like simple data poisoning. I mean, that's more relevant to the fact like if you're pulling, you want to make sure what you're actually pulling that data. But again, there's specific security controls you can do around that, but
that is so funny that you mentioned that people are just going out there, they're saying, you know, it'd be great if we don't even have to deal with the whole security measures that someone puts into place and we get to the model before anybody because we're in the training data and the training data is talking.
Exactly. So that was actually what it was really bugging me. So I had to check out. I did a talk on it a while ago. There's a talk at a DEF CON from my friend Will. He's fantastic. It's called Split View Data Poisoning. And then I actually did a talk at a local OWASP DEF CON kind of meetup. I built a little image on my GitHub repo, which I was kind of proud of. I spent a lot of time drawing that. Like, you know, attacker uses domain monitoring for known common and public training data sources, purchase a bunch of expired bogus domains. I think Will spent like $13 and like he literally had control of 1,000 domains. Like you inject that, let's say you put like cat memes in there. You've got a model that's like training on like cat memes, which is like, you know, you can see the use cases where it could be malicious or, you know, just like bogus. Like, you know, if it's a competition, like, you know, that's also one thing I am personally worried about, right? Like, if I want to beat you and I know what you're training on, maybe I just, like, throw a bunch of, like, cat memes in there and, like, you know, throw you off. That's very nasty, but...
Yeah. Dude, because you're never going to find that. I mean, it's so much effort to go through all that data that you've got, especially on these, you know, like the 180B Falcon model that's trained on everything that anyone's ever said in this universe.
Pace bin, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And damn, so if you've got a shit ton of data poisoning happening and you know how to prompt it to get that, then all of a sudden, oh, there's a vulnerability in my model.
Yeah, cash money.
Yeah, and you don't even... The funny thing is that it's like it's a latent vulnerability almost, because it's not there until somebody that knows about it goes, oh, hey, I think you trained on my data. And then, boom, they can capture that in a way.
100%, yeah. That's what I was kind of alluding to with, like, if you could keep a lineage of that, right? And the only way, I guess, to do that is to perform internal red teaming experiences regularly on like a pipeline basis for you to try and find that earlier so you can mitigate that, so you can go back and be like, you know, we weren't seeing this from the release of this model, but we're seeing it from the release of this model. What did we change or what did we add between that could help us kind of then go back and drill down into that?
Yeah, where could this have come from? And then all of a sudden you find Will's websites with the cat memes.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Dude, but yeah, the kind of shit that you could just put and the next llama model all of a sudden is open sourced and nobody knows about it because it's in latent space that nobody's touched.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody that does, the one or two people that do know about it, they can take advantage of that. And there's a huge vulnerability there.
Make this even gnarlier, right? And be like, okay, so you know that example I gave you earlier about when it like deleted the GitHub repo?
Yeah.
Like, let's say there's like hidden markdown elements in the web page. How are you going to even detect that? Because like, then you, that makes it even more, it makes it even more difficult for you to be like, identify that if you've got like hidden markdown, which has got instructions or instructions BS in there, or, you know, it's BS in there in general, but the, you know, like RAG is pulling that, then it also makes it even harder. Like, it might not be a cat meme in front of you. It could be something like, you know, like we see things like dry bar downloads, right? You don't see that from like the face value. It's what's underneath as well.
Yeah, it's one layer deeper because you're looking at it and you're like, I see a cat meme, and the metadata is telling the model something completely different.
Yeah, exactly. One of my other good friends, Ram, wrote a book called Not With a Book, With a Sticker. I don't know if everyone's ever read it, but it's a great book. The kind of the subject of the book, I guess it kind of goes back to like, you know, Tesla's, where they were doing like AI driving, and you know, you slap like a bit of tape in front of like a 3 and make it a 1, and the car changes speed based on that. So yeah, you definitely got like inherent and I guess indirect and direct kind of prompt injection techniques, because there's different ways of being able to hide stuff or whatever, right? Or yeah,
one thing that we used to talk about when it came to model monitoring was an example of a self-driving car and it recognizing stop signs, but then all of a sudden it snows and
yeah,
the stop sign has snow all over it, and
indirect prompt injection.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait, was that the model that changed, or was it the real world that changed? And so you had that data drift, or just that unknown data set that it hadn't been trained on. But dude, yeah, fascinating stuff. I mean, when it comes to this idea of being able to put toxic data out there for LLMs to go and get trained on, that is a really interesting one that I hadn't been thinking about. I knew about data toxicity. I just didn't realize how predominant that could potentially be now that we're in this world of creating language models with all the data on the internet.
Yeah. And like, yeah, spinning up a bogus domain is, you can automate that. You can make it super cheap. It's not like super in depth to do that, right? If someone has the drive to do it, you know.
That is so wild. Well, Ads, I appreciate you coming on here, man. This has been enlightening for me. Maybe I will ask you to pop in every once in a while and give us just the securities update.
It would be my privilege. Thank you so much for having me. This is an awesome opportunity. I thank you guys. I was actually reading some of your blogs. The community is awesome. Join the Slack group. So always open to chat. Thanks so much for having me. It's been awesome. And I definitely will be following you as well. I'll be stalking you.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it. That's the power of the community, man. And so anybody out there that is interested or tangentially interested in getting into the security world, there's a great project out there, and it is at llmtop1010.com. You can check it out, and we'll end it there.
Thanks so much. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Hey, this is Mike Dalbasso, co-founder and CEO of Tekton. MLOps community is the best way to stay in the loop on the latest MLOps news and best practices. It's also a great way to connect with experts and get support from an amazingly helpful community. Subscribe and stay in the loop.